free, you ain't free, not like you used to be. Big brother, he knows where you go, he knows where you've been. CCTV, satellites, and drones cruising the blue. They're out there and they're watching you, yeah.
Hi guys, this is Richard Sachs, your host on Lost Arts Radio. Hope you're all doing well. And we have a friend of ours returning today for a guest tonight, Alex Newman, foreign correspondent and investigative journalist for The New American Magazine, which you can see on thenewamerican.com. And he's also a teacher and educator at Freedom Project Academy, FPEUSA.org. And we've had a lot of great discussions up to now on the show before, and thought this time, since it's an area that Alex knows about, another one of those, we'd get into a part of what we've been talking about lately. We're working on a series about the deep state at the moment with Joel Skousen and other people involved. And part of that, you know, these terms people use all the time, they don't necessarily know what they mean exactly. And one of the things that ties into the deep state is the Council on Foreign Relations, something that Alex has been working on for a long time. So we want to see what we can do to clarify what that is, history of it, where it started, where it's going, what it's doing now, and how it ties into the bigger picture and current events. Should be something we can talk about within a 9-month show or so, but we're going to try to cram it into an hour. So see what happens. Welcome, Alex, and thanks for the time. I appreciate it.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on, Richard. It's great to be with you.
This is going to go fast, as it always does with you. And let's start with Council on Foreign Relations. Where did it come from? What can you say about the origin?
Yeah, well, the history of the CFR is very interesting. Essentially, the globalists tried to get us into a proto-global government back with the League of Nations, and it failed. You know, our Senate overwhelmingly said no because the American people weren't interested. You know, we're fine over here. Thank you very much. We've got everything we need. We don't need any policy help from dictatorships and from European monarchs and all the rest of it. We'll do our own thing. Thank you. And the vote was overwhelming. And so the globalists said, well, hey, how are we going to get America ensnared in one of these entangling alliances with these international organizations that we can eventually use as the nucleus to build a world government? And they knew it was going to take a lot of persuasion, to put it as nicely as possible. And so they set up the Council on Foreign Relations in 1921. And the explicit goal was to prepare America to be ready to surrender sovereignty and move into this future organization, which would eventually become the UN. And I actually have a book behind me. I don't know if you're listening, you probably can't hear it, but if you're watching, you can see it. It's called Tragedy and Hope.
Yeah.
A History of the World in Our Time. Yeah, it's a fascinating book. In fact, a lot of it's really boring. If you try to plow through it, you'll realize that, you know, a lot of it just gets really dry and you find yourself thinking about other things and you read 20 pages, you're like, what just happened?
Well, it's like 1,400 pages or something.
It is. It's enormous. I mean, people can see here. And it's written by an actual guy who was like an insider. I mean, he actually explains that he agrees with the goals of the establishment. They allowed him to look at their papers for a period of years. And he said his chief difference of opinion with them was that he thought all this should be open, that it should be known to the people, and they thought it ought to be secret. And so they disagreed. Everybody said the goal was a world government, a world system of financial control in private hands that could dominate the political systems of every country. And he talks about what he describes as the round table groups. And this had its origins with Cecil Rhodes, this super, kind of like the deep state before the deep state was a thing. This is the guy from the British Empire who went down to Southern Africa. Actually, Rhodesia was named after him, to give you an example of how influential this guy was. He hated the Boer, the Afrikaner people, so he got the British Empire to go down there and try to smash the Boer republics that were in many ways modeled on the American vision. You know, we declared independence from Britain, and they didn't want anything to do with Britain either.
Boers actually came from Scandinavia, didn't they?
Yeah, many of them did. Yep, from Denmark, primarily from Holland, and then they mixed in with Lutherans from from Denmark, from Sweden, and from Germany, and they really are their own nation. You know, people talk about them as if they're just descendants of the Dutch, and that's not really the whole story. Their language is similar in some ways to Dutch, but it's unique, and they really are a unique nation of people. And Cecil Rhodes hated them, right, because they weren't part of the British Empire. Right?
Yeah.
They were independent, and they were sitting on top of all his gold. How dare they?
Right? Yeah, that was bad. And also, his idea of world government was actually getting everybody under Britain, right?
Part exactly.
Of the United Kingdom.
He wanted a world government, and he loved the British Empire, and he thought the whole world should be ruled by people like himself, who were, you know, obviously smarter and better than us in every possible way.
Let's see, who would be the best? Me. Right.
Exactly. And that was their attitude, right? So this guy made a fortune after mass murdering the Boers. You know, they put the women and children of the Boers in concentration camps. Some of the first concentration camps we have documented in human history. And barbarism, like, people can't even imagine. You know, we think of the British Empire sometimes as the civilizing influence that went around the world and brought civilization to you know, peoples who had not yet been reached by Christianity and some of these things. Well, Rhodes was not exactly that kind of a civilization guy. In fact, when the Boers resisted his agenda, you know, something like 50,000 Boer farmers, a lot of them just kids, you know, ragtag militia. They were good at horseback riding, they were good at shooting and good at farming, but you know, they weren't a highly disciplined army or anything. It's just, you know, ragtag farmers turned into a militia. But 40 to 50,000 of them managed to hold off the entire might of the British Empire. They eventually had to send 500,000 troops down there to fight these ragtag farmers who were good horsmen. And
Was that called the Boer Wars?
That was. It was the Second Boer War, the 1899. Enormous conflagration. You know, under the leadership of Rhodes and Lord Milner and some of these other deep state British characters who really, I mean, if we're honest, they just wanted the resources that the Boers were sitting on. And they didn't like the idea that there was these independent, you know, free people sitting there governing themselves outside of the control of British influence. So they sent in agitators who were like, hey, we want voting rights. They're like, well, you know, you're not a citizen here. No, right? They call them Uitlanders. You guys are foreigners. Get out. If you don't want to live here under our rules, then leave. No, you can't do that. Yeah, come on. So they sent in the troops. And long story short, they put the women and children into concentration camps to get the Boer farmers to lay down their arms. And after exterminating almost 30,000 women and children, not even including the blacks, they created separate concentration camps for black people and also exterminated large numbers of them. But they starved to death about 30,000 women and children from the Boer nations. And finally, the men said, hey, you know what? You're killing our wives and our children. We can't keep fighting under these conditions. So absolute savagery, you know, on an unimaginable scale. And they took all this money, Rhodes and his cohorts, all this money that he had made. And in his will, he outlined, you know, separate funds for different things. And one of the funds went to creating the Round Table Groups, a kind of secret society with the ultimate objective of bringing the world under global control, under a global government, really led by, you know, the British elites, some of whom were, you know, rather nasty in terms of perversion, in terms of, you know, the things that they were doing. And that's really the genesis of the CFR. In this book, he talks about how the CFR is kind of like the main outpost of the roundtable groups in the United States, this kind of secret conspiracy, you know, interlocking circles, right, of influence. So you had the central core and then rings outside of that. And that's the genesis of the CFR. And since then, you know, there's been a lot written. They've done a lot. But that's really where it came from, Richard.
Okay. And so from 1899, when you said it was the approximate year of the Second Boer War, right? What was the evolution after that?
So it took a few years for them to finally crush the Boers, and they did. You know, you had the ZAR, the Zuid-Afrikaanse Republic, or whatever, the South African Republic. And then you had the Transvaal, and you had the Orange Free State, right, were the two significant Boer republics. And finally, you know, after murdering enough women and children, the Boers laid down their weapons and surrendered. And what happened then was they created the Union of South Africa. And so Rhodes made himself an enormous fortune, right, in mining and gold and diamonds and in, you know, mineral extraction out of Southern Africa.
right.
put that money to use in create. You know, we still have like Rhodes scholarships today, right? Bill Clinton mm-hmm. was a Rhodes scholar. So they pick yeah. Americans who they think are very promising, and then they take them over to Britain to be trained to be good little agents. Yeah, Rachel Maddow, that weird guy on MSNBC, is another Rhodes scholar, right?
Do they end up going to Oxford or somewhere like that?
These prestigious elite universities. I can't remember if it's Oxford or Cambridge or maybe both. But yeah, they get an elite British education. And then, sometimes something goes wrong. But generally speaking, these Rhodes scholars then later on serve to advance the objectives of these roundtable groups. And, you know, the CFR has evolved from its early days, but it's still extremely influential. It's still very globalist in its outlook. It now has a massive amount of power. It doesn't matter if a Republican or a Democrat is in office. Typically, their cabinets will be drawn sometimes almost exclusively from members of the Council on Foreign Relations. You had Hillary Clinton serving as Secretary of State. I've got the video of this on my YouTube channel. It's all over the place. She says they opened up an office in Washington, D.C. She says, "Oh, it's great to have an outpost of the mothership here in Washington, D.C.
Right.
And great, now I won't have to go as far to be told what I should be doing and how I should be thinking about the world, right? So she told us who's giving her instructions. It's not just a Democrat thing. Republicans are very much involved as well. Darth Vader, a.k.a. Dick Cheney, there's that famous video clip of him saying, "Oh, yeah, great to be back at the Council on Foreign Relations. I was a director for a period of time, and I never told the folks when I was campaigning for re-election back home in Wyoming."
Yeah, I didn't have time to get into it.
Right. I mean, they know that politically speaking, especially among, grassroots conservatives, the name CFR now is toxic. I mean, it's as toxic as can be. People hear CFR and they think, globalist, commie, sellout, traitor, nasty, insider, establishment, deep state type, swamp yeah. type, as Trump says it. But that's what we're dealing with. It's an organization that's relatively secretive. I mean, they publish things. You can read their magazine. You can read their publications. They now have a public membership list. You can find it on the CFR's website. Mm-hmm. Several thousand of the most influential Americans you can find. And they're all united behind globalism, Richard. It's not me just saying that. If you read their publication, you see always and anywhere where there's an opportunity to reduce U.S. sovereignty, they're always in favor of that, whether that be promoting U.N. agreements or, the North American Union that they were pushing for a long time. Yeah. And they've been doing this for a long time. In 1974, they had this incredible article by Richard Gardner talking about how the world order was going to have to be built from the ground up, and it was going to require an end run around national sovereignty as opposed to the old fashioned frontal assault that we used to have. But then, we're going to have to build this world order and do it quietly, erode sovereignty piece by piece. And you've even had defectors who've come out of there too. One of the obvious ones to mention is Admiral Chester Ward. This was the highest ranking Navy official, highest you can get. He joined and he was a member for 16 years. That's the kind of people they go for, right? People high ranking in the military and diplomacy, academia, business. And you're like, why hasn't Fox News told me about this? Well, you're probably not surprised to know that News Corporation, the parent company of Fox News, is actually a corporate member of the Council on Foreign Relations. That's why they don't tell you about it, right?
That's interesting.
It is, yeah. And all the big media is involved in this. And this guy, Chester Ward, when he defected after 16 years in the CFR, he blew the whistle. He wrote some books about it. He worked with Phyllis Schlafly to get the word out. And he said he revealed a lot. I mean, for one, he revealed that the great majority of the membership is fanatically dedicated to this idea of submerging U.S. independence and building and submerging it into an all-powerful one-world government is how Chester Ward explained it. And he said that the bulk of the membership agrees with that. And obviously some of them are, naive, potentially well-meaning dupes who've just been, led to believe that this is a good idea for peace or whatever the pretext is.
Yeah.
But that's their goal. And he said also that the Rockefellers, the Rockefeller dynasty forms kind of like the inner core of this organization that really decides the policy. And this was very clear with David Rockefeller. In fact, I've got another one of his books somewhere around here, his autobiography, where he admits on page 405 that, and he served as a leading member of this CFR for a long time. He said, "Some even accused my family and me of being internationalists and of conspiring."
And he said he's guilty, right?
That's right. He's guilty and he's proud of it. But he said conspiring with others around the world of trying to build a more integrated world system, a one world political and economic order, if you will. And he says, "If that's the charge, I stand guilty and I'm proud of it." So he's proud to be a conspirator working with a secret cabal against the best interests of his own country. This is all his words, to create a one world order. And, you know, he was one of the lead people in the CFR, also founded the Trilateral Commission, which is like CFR, but for America, Western Europe, and Japan. Uh-huh. Also founded a whole bunch of front groups to advance this, and he's put his billions of dollars into backing all that. And, you know, he's dead now, but he's got descendants, and obviously this was a very, very influential man. You remember that old joke, maybe you've heard it, that why doesn't David Rockefeller run for president? Well, he doesn't want a demotion, right? I mean, come on, you don't want to get demoted. So. Yeah.
So if that's supposed to evolve into a world government, what about the Asian part of the world? You know, the other big countries, Russia and China, and the ones that they would need to include if it was really global. Are they represented with those as well or not?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question. I think this is really an area that a lot of people in the freedom movement and the truth movement and the patriot movement aren't really as familiar with as they need to be. And I even hear it said sometimes, people say, oh, Putin's going to save us, right? Putin's fighting the New World Order, or the Chi-Coms, right? The Chinese communists, they're going to resist the New World Order. Baloney, right? Absolute baloney. I've got another book behind me, speaking of books. It's by Anthony Sutton, one of the great historians of American history. And he wrote a series of incredible books. Actually, they've just now been republished by the John Birch Society in one volume, a trilogy. And the one I'm thinking about right now is Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution. And what he outlines is that these very same people who were involved in the CFR, these mega bankers, right, the J.P. Morgans of the world, the Rockefellers, these people who were involved in the core of the CFR actually financed and helped lead the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia. And, you know, the American people and people all over the world are fed this phony narrative that America was, you know, defending the free world while evil Russia was, you know, spreading communism all over the world. Baloney. Absolute baloney, right? Communism was always a project of the Western elites, and it continues to be that to this day. You know, it wasn't sold as that because, like, hey, guys, overthrow your oppressors and let us be your new oppressors. I mean, that wouldn't have sold very well. That wouldn't have been a good marketing slogan. So you had super capitalists funding communist revolution in Russia. Very, very well documented. I mean, they poured all kinds of money into this revolution. And, you know, even the alleged collapse of communism in the Soviet Union was largely phony. I've got another book behind, and I had to keep pointing all these books behind me, but there it is right there. It's called New Lies for the Old by Anatoly Golitchyn. And this was a KGB disinformation officer in Department D. And he actually explains in the 80s that the communists were going to stage a phony collapse of communism, of communist totalitarianism in Russia and in Eastern Europe. He made something like 205 specific predictions about what was going to happen. He even named names. He said they were going to take down the Berlin Wall, and Poland was going to be, you know, Lech Walesa was going to lead an anti-communist uprising, even though he was a communist agent all along. And guess what? Almost every single one of those predictions has come true, right? Wow. So we think, oh, yay, the free world won, the communists went down. No, right? Putin, the gangster who runs Russia today, comes straight out of this machinery. In fact, he was the head of the KGB, right? And you know, he pretends to be a good Christian now. I saw him the other day; he was going in the holy water, and you know, he does this thing. He does what I consider to be a good show, and I can't judge, you know, where he is spiritually. But this is a guy who came right out of the communist machinery. And the same is true with China, right? There's another phenomenal book about this. It's called Again, May God Forgive Us by Robert Welch. And what he did was he showed how these same treasonous elites, largely centered at the Council on Foreign Relations, were responsible for betraying our ally, Chiang Kai-shek. You know, he helped us in World War II to defeat Japan. He was actually instrumental in helping us to defeat Japan. You know, he wasn't perfect. He didn't believe in liberty probably quite as much as most Americans would, but he was an anti-communist, and he was a good ally of the United States, and he was a good fighter. He wanted to help us fight the communists in Korea. He wanted to continue fighting the communists in China. And the subversives within the U.S. State Department and within the U.S. Defense Department, almost every single one of them, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, stabbed him in the back. People like George Marshall, right? Joe McCarthy wrote a phenomenal book about this guy. What was it called? Snatching Defeat from the... Something about victory. Sure, I can't remember the name, but when I think of it, I'll let you know. But he wrote an excellent book about this whole process where people like George Marshall, CFR member who served as Secretary of Defense, Secretary of War, all the, and State, deliberately put an arms embargo on Chiang Kai-shek, tried to force him into a coalition government with the communists so that eventually they could do the final betrayal and have China fall to the communists. And they did so much to help the communists take over. After World War II was, the U.S. government dropped the bombs. They said, hey, Stalin, you should declare war on Japan so that you get to be one of the victors, right? So after we dropped the nuclear bombs, the Japanese were practically begging us to surrender. Stalin declared war on Japan. And then as one of the victors, they said, hey, why don't you go conquer Manchuria? Why don't you go take Manchuria? You can occupy Manchuria. And what happened? Well, that's where the Japanese had all their weapons stashed, right? So Stalin marches in, takes over Manchuria, hands all those weapons right to the Chinese communists, which is exactly what these traitors in the CFR knew was going to happen. So now Mao had tons of weaponry, tons of ammunition, support from the U.S. government. Meanwhile, Chiang Kai-shek had an arms embargo on him. The guy couldn't even buy ammo, couldn't even buy replacement parts for his men's guns. And so what happened? Well, China fell to the communists. And at every step of the way, they've been building up communist China. You know, back to David Rockefeller, again, key CFR guy. He went over there in the early 1970s. And he wrote in the New York Times, you can still read his column. It's still on their website today. I forget what it's called, an internet journey of an international traveler or something like that. And David Rockefeller wrote it. It's about his trip to communist China. And he says, and I quote, the social experiment under Chairman Mao in China is one of the most important and successful in all human history.
Yeah,
60 to 80 million people dead, all their culture destroyed, children ratting out their parents so their parents could be tortured. Yeah, that's a really successful
social experiment. Some of the main news outlets in the U.S. agree with that New York Times and Time Magazine and
absolutely. And if you look, they've been building out communist China every step of the way, right? Richard Nixon went over there with Henry Kissinger, another key CFR guy, to open up China. They started transferring all of our... Bill Clinton literally handed them our most sensitive military technology. Of course, the Clinton family's in like this with the Council on Foreign Relations. Again, Hillary Clinton told us publicly that that's where she takes her orders from. So, the evidence trail on this is absolutely crystal clear. The CFR has been selling out America at every turn. Russia, China, and even like South Africa is part of, the BRICS. People say, oh, the BRICS, they're in conflict with the Western globalists. Absolutely not, right? The first guy to use the term BRICS was actually a Goldman Sachs guy, right? The BRICS is not a thing. And in almost every case, the governments of these BRICS were actually put in place by the Western globalists. The same is true in South Africa, right? Finally, in the early 1990s, they had terrorized and persecuted the Boers so successfully that they voted themselves out of political power, basically surrendered total control of their own destiny. And the communists took over with total backing from the CFR. David Rockefeller and the CFR were hosting fundraisers for the ANC, even while the ANC was on our list of designated terrorist organizations. Mandela and the ANC didn't come off that list until about 2008. Just to give you some perspective, you had the CFR raising money for a designated terrorist organization famous for massacring and torturing black people. They pioneered this thing called necklacing, where they would, put a tire on people's necks and fill it up with petrol and then throw a fire on it, a match on it, and say the most painful death you can possibly imagine. Right. That's the kind of thing these terrorists were doing. And yet you had the CFR hosting fundraisers for them and bringing them to the United States to give speeches and raise money. Total support from the State Department. And, the idea that South Africa is going to stand up to this, again, totally ludicrous. Brazil is maybe the one bright spot. The CFR thought they had that on lock. The communists had basically taken over. Today, praise God, they're all in big trouble, right? Lula, the previous communist president, is now sitting in jail for his crimes. His handpicked successor, Dilma Rousseff, a communist terrorist who kidnapped the U.S. ambassador, she was now impeached, and she may still find herself in hot water. And now you kind of have like a counter-revolution going on in Brazil. But, almost every one of these so-called BRICS nations is ruled by governments that are very, very close to, if they weren't directly installed by the CFR, the links are impossible to deny. And so you now have the whole world almost marching in lockstep toward this new world order that the CFR wants to build, with a few hiccups along the way, right? I think Trump is kind of a hiccup. I think Bolsonaro in Brazil is kind of a hiccup. I think
Victor Bolsonaro surrounded by traitors like Trump is, or no?
Not as bad as Trump, actually. I know several people who know Bolsonaro, and I'll be honest, I was shocked to see him win the presidency, you know, because people years ago were telling me, oh, there's this wonderful guy, Bolsonaro, and he's so awesome. He's, you know, he serves in Congress and all this, and we're going to try to get him president one day. I thought, oh, that's cute, right? That'd be like, you know, we're going to get Ron Paul as president one day. Okay, yeah. But hey, they did it, right? And so
he
now
almost got killed, actually.
He did. They did. It was an assassination attempt. And as usual, oh, he's just a lone nut. Nothing to see here.
Yeah, right. No connections to anybody.
None whatsoever, yeah. Right? Just totally, totally a nut, and that's it. Yeah. And if you say any different, you're a nut.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Interesting. So several things you mentioned. One is about Putin, that trying to figure out where he's coming from. You know, he's done some good things in Russia, particularly, you know, prior to 2016, when he tried to suggest to Trump that they have some kind of an alliance so they didn't have to blow the world up, which seemed like a reasonable suggestion. And it seemed to me that Trump should have accepted it, at least if it turned out to be true. And he was prevented by bad advisors that said, you'll prove that you're a Russian agent if you cooperate at all with Russia. But Putin was doing things like trying to get 5G and wireless out of schools. He wanted to become the biggest exporter of organic food in the world, supporting families, giving them land for farming. Where's he coming from, and what is he just making believe that he's doing some good things, or what do you think?
That's a very good point. And, you know, if we're honest, we have to say he has done a lot of good things. He has implemented policies that I'm frankly jealous of. You know, why can't we have those things in the Western world?
Better than here, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, he's really liberalized the scene on homeschooling. I went to the first global home education conference in Berlin. There was a lot of Russians there. And, you know, Russia is not really a place that you associate with a lot of liberty. And you have all these Russians like, oh, no, we have total homeschool freedom. And our government encourages us to homeschool. I'm like, wow, that's kind of cool. And, you know, even the stuff that he gets criticized for, I'm like, what are you criticizing? Like the law against the homosexual propaganda to children. Like, why are you freaking out? Why do you want to do homosexual propaganda to children? What's wrong with you? You're acting like that's some kind of human rights violation. You have a human rights to put homosexual propaganda in front of children. Something's wrong with that. He's tried little by little to restrict abortion. You know, not in the sense that I would like, just you can't murder babies, period. And if you do, you're going to pay the price. But he's made positive steps in that direction. He's liberalized firearm laws. So, you know, it's easier today for a Russian to carry a firearm than it was 10 or 20 years ago. And that's nice. So that's good things happening. But I'm not 100% sure that I have a good explanation for all this. I can't say that I do. I think, you know, when you look on the flip side, there's also a lot of bad things going on, too. And this is one of the things that I've written about extensively in the New American Magazine. We actually examined this topic. My colleague Bill Jasper and I dedicated a three-part cover story series to Putin and to what he was doing. And we try to examine him, you know, just step back and look. So what is he doing? And again, you have to acknowledge that he's done some good things, things that are pro-freedom, pro-family, pro-health, things like that. And those are undeniably good. But when you look at the bigger picture, you see that he is in many respects pursuing the same agenda as the globalists. So let me give you some examples. He sits down regularly with Henry Kissinger. He describes Kissinger as his friend and as his trusted advisor. And yet no one's calling for Kissinger's head, right? He's a Russian agent. And maybe he was, right? I don't know. Yeah. But nobody wants to talk about that, right?
Putin's a Kissinger agent.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, and Kissinger has always been an errand boy for the Rockefellers. Always. I mean, that is how he became powerful, is by being a water carrier for the Rockefellers. The Rockefellers liked the guy and said, you know, all right, you could be our servant. And he said, okay, all good, I'll be your servant. And that's why he came to prominence. That's why he got to be Secretary of State. That's why he got to serve as National Security Advisor. He was a Rockefeller agent, and it's just that simple. And yet he's got this very close relationship with Putin. And, you know, when Trump meets with Kissinger, everybody's like, hey, what are you doing? Kissinger's a globalist. He wants a new world order. Stop doing that. Okay, good. We should do that. And yet when Putin meets with Kissinger, oh, no, Putin's going to fight the new world order for us. Okay, there's kind of a disconnect here. And on the international front, I think Putin's policies are pretty clearly globalist. And he doesn't talk like a globalist. In fact, sometimes he even talks against globalism, and I think that's good. But you need to look, you know, actions are more powerful and more significant than words, than rhetoric. And let me give you some examples of what he's doing on the international front. He's building what he describes as a Eurasian Union, right? He's getting some of these former Soviet countries together. I think they've got, at last count, 6 or 7. They've got, you know, some of them are small, but they've got Belarus, right? White Russia, Belarusia. They've got Azerbaijan. They've got Kazakhstan, you know, which is a pretty significant Central Asian power. They've got them now in this thing they call the Eurasian Union, which is very, very similar to the European Union. And in fact, Putin himself talked about one day we can merge with the European Union. We can have the same standards and all that, and we'll have a free trade area from Lisbon to Vladivostok on the Pacific coast of Russia. So on that front, he's very, very clearly pursuing a globalist agenda. In fact, it was Henry Kissinger in his book World Order who said that the world order was going to have to come about as a result of first regional orders, you know, basically subverting national sovereignty into regional forms of government like the EU, like the African Union, like the Eurasian Union. And then from there, then we could figure out a way to fit these regional orders into a world order. And so Putin is following that plan perfectly. Right. He's also signed on to the international climate agreements. Right. If he was truly fighting the New World Order, if he was truly trying to stop globalism, he'd say this whole climate thing is a giant fraud. We're an oil exporter. Sorry, we're not going to play along with your idiotic hypothesis that the gas we exhale, the CO2, is somehow a toxic pollution.
Right. One of the questions that comes up about that I've noticed in trying to figure out how these seemingly opposites fit together in the behavior of different key people. There are at least two different major kinds of intelligence. One is what they call IQ, your ability to process information quickly and come up with answers. But that's not necessarily, it doesn't necessarily have any component of common sense. And sometimes people who are brilliant don't understand some real basic things. So the question with Putin is, does he know that he's working for the destruction of the world and all freedom or not? Because I don't think we should assume he necessarily knows. For example, Trump is doing some things that could endanger the survival of all life on the planet. But I don't think he has any idea that he's doing that. You know, he was conventionally trained. He believes in great companies, even if they're incredibly toxic and terrible. He trusts high-level military officers and he hires them when they become his enemies, and they always were. And I don't think he's hiring his own enemies on purpose, but he's a smart person. So these are these two types of intelligence, one being there and the other completely lacking. And I wonder what the evaluation on that level would be with Putin.
Yeah, and that's a very good question, and I can't claim to know, Richard. It's been a while since I've been in Russia. And you know, it's a strange place. It's not a place where I'd want to spend a lot of time. And it's certainly a possibility that some of these people have been duped. And I think with Trump, in many cases, that is exactly what's happened. You know, the USMCA comes to mind, where, you know, he's been speaking out about globalism. He's been speaking out about how dangerous these multilateral trade agreements that surrender sovereignty are. And yet here he is pushing a suicidal trade agreement written by a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, right? Robert Lighthizer, his U.S. Trade Representative, is a member of CFR. And it flies in the face of everything he campaigned on. Why is he doing it, right? And there's other things, too.
I think it's because he trusts the people he delegates things to.
Yep. Because he comes from the business world. You know, he expects that you give somebody instructions in the business world and they do it, right? Otherwise, they get fired.
They're not normally a spy or an infiltrator or something.
That's right. And in government, things work very differently. You know, some of that might be possible with Putin. I can't claim to know. Just considering his background in the KGB, I'm much more suspicious of Putin and his motives than I would be, say, of Donald Trump, who had absolutely no experience in government, no experience in intelligence and, you know, the subversive agencies. Not a member of CFR, not a member of Bilderberg, right? Didn't have a close relationship with people like Henry Kissinger. So with Trump, I'm more inclined to give him the benefit of the doubt than with Putin. It's certainly possible that Putin may just be naive, that he may be being manipulated, that Henry Kissinger whispered in his ear that to stay competitive in the modern world, you have to form a Eurasian Union, otherwise the EU is going to crush you.
Actually believe stuff like that.
Absolutely. And if you go into the CFR, you know, most of the rank and file members of the CFR are not, you know, hey, let's go in the secret room and let's smoke cigars and they'll be all conspiratorial.
Most of the people working working for the UN are the same way.
Precisely.
They and think even they're a lot saving of the world.
CIA. That's right.
Yeah.
They think they're doing the right thing. You know, and you can see, and I can see, because I was once a globalist. I fell for this whole narrative that, right. Oh, you know, as long as we have independent nation states, then we're going to have, you know, wars, and we're going to have all these conflicts, yeah. And we have all these global problems that require global solutions. I mean, if you're naive and you're gullible and you haven't read your Bible and you haven't read a history.
It doesn't mean that you're not smart, though.
That's right.
Some
that's
really smart absolutely. People believe that.
Absolutely. There's no question. Some people way smarter than you and I, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, mingle right. around in these scenes, and they truly think, hey, the world is going to be a better place once we get rid of national sovereignty. There are absolutely well-meaning people who I think are deluded who believe that.
I think some of the people even running it who believe in evil for its own sake are otherwise intelligent, very intelligent.
Oh, no question. Absolutely.
Well, and they just don't read. They're not smart.
Intelligent.
Right, exactly. And they're not smart enough on the other side to realize there are laws of nature that don't care what you believe. If you do something to somebody, it's going to come back and have a result on you. And they don't believe they're subject to those laws. So, yep. And when you look at not just Putin, but Xi Jinping in China, he has been set up as an enemy of the U.S. after Chiang Kai-shek got chased off to Formosa, you know, before it was Taiwan. It looks like he's just operating against it, but behind, you know, on another level, he's been armed and given all the information he needs to be a more effective enemy by the people you're talking about.
Absolutely, and there's no doubt about it in my mind. You know, even people like George Soros, I call him Dr. Evil. This is a guy who on multiple occasions repeatedly has said China should own the New World Order. He was getting the Globalist of the Year Award in Canada. I think this was in 2015, maybe. He said, oh, yeah, China has a better functioning economy and a better functioning government than the United States. Like, what planet does this guy live on? They perpetrate forced abortions. And I mean, they treat their people as if they're cattle.
Well, that's what he calls better functioning.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. And so, you know, if you believe that people are slaves and cattle that ought to be managed as if they were slaves and cattle, then, yeah, China does a phenomenal job of herding the cattle. Right. Because they don't have any things like constitution and individual rights, and, you know, fair courts. I'll get rid of all that. So you don't need that.
Right.
And
those
so,
hey, are very it's inefficient things. Anyway,
that's right. That's
the
exactly
problem with
right.
Soros is he doesn't have one of those white cats that you're supposed to pat.
Right. He absolutely should, right?
Yeah. So you've got people that are playing their parts on what has been called the grand chessboard, right? Who may not fully realize the part that they're playing.
Absolutely. And I've come to that conclusion. You know, a lot of people, I think, see it as a massive conspiracy in which all the key participants are necessarily involved in it. And I think, you know, there's some truth to that, but I think there's also an element of, you know, more of a spiritual component to this, where people are just kind of being guided into advancing this objective of the New World Order, the totalitarian global government, where, you know, they don't necessarily have to communicate with other elements of the operation. They just kind of are being ushered in that way. But, you know, I think what is very, very clear is that the CFR is the nucleus of this deep state power center here in the United States, along with some others, and that they are very closely working with and building up some of these allegedly hostile foreign powers that supposedly threaten the United States and so on. And, you know, one of the things that Admiral Ward said that I thought was really profound was, if you want to know the policy of the United States government years in advance, get a subscription to Foreign Affairs, right? That's the magazine published by the Council on Foreign Relations, and they'll tell you. And so when they start advocating certain policies, you know, he explained how the process works. First, they propose it, and then if you see that they continue advocating it, they start forming committees, they start, you know, putting out the propaganda, they start getting all their members to start talking about it in public, and soon it seems irresistible and unstoppable, right? And so now we see some new policies. Actually, one of the articles that I sent you recently was about that. They've got this new policy. I shouldn't call it a policy because it's actually a range of policies, a package of policies. They're saying, "Hey, look at all this new technology. Look at all the automation. You got artificial intelligence coming in. You got all these jobs that are going to be lost." And so the U.S. government and the state governments and the local governments and the academia and the companies and everybody in the United States needs to get ready for this by following these policy prescriptions. And what you see is it's a move toward big technocratic globalist government, and some of it is just absurd on its face, Richard. Like, you know, on the one hand, they're telling you, hey, all you middle class Americans, you're all going to lose your jobs because automation is going to take your job away. Yeah. But at the same time, in the same document, they're saying, hey, we should open the border much wider and bring in all kinds of people from other countries so that they can take all those jobs that aren't going to exist anymore because you guys are all going to lose your jobs as a result of automation. Like, yeah. Wait a minute, what? What? And yet that's what they're advocating.
I mean, people are being trained to not think logically anymore, too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're given opposing things all the time and told both are true.
Cognitive dissonance. That's exactly right. And the average American today believes all kinds of contradictory things at the same time without even realizing.
Yeah. It's memorization crazy. Instead of learning.
Yep.
Right.
And you're right about the logic, too. I mean, the average American today has no understanding of logic. They wouldn't recognize a logical argument if it bit them in the face. They're just incapable of thinking in those terms. And it's tragic, right? They think now with emotions and with feelings. Well, that makes me feel bad. Therefore, I'm going to protest.
Well, but beyond that, you're told what makes you feel bad.
Yep.
Like if you get told this, you have to feel really bad.
Yep.
And you memorize all the ways you're supposed to react.
Exactly.
But fortunately, we're all going to be given the universal basic income.
Yeah, I can't wait, right?
So everything's going to be great. And there won't be any conditions on the money, of course.
Right. And until you make them mad, then you're in trouble, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, I tell people this all the time. You know, people are like, well, you know, it's a right to have health care. The government should give me health care. The government should give me food.
Exactly.
Like, you know what? I can think of a place where you'll get, it's like a utopia. You get free food, you get free dental care, you get free health care, you don't have to make any decisions for yourself, you get free housing, and
taxes
we have a name for that place. It's called prison.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I never realized what great advantages it had.
Right.
You could just spread that worldwide.
That's right. And there's a lot of people now who've been conditioned to believe that. Like, well, you know, in Sweden, they get free health care. It's like, yeah, you know what? I have a friend who has a ranch and he's got 100 heads of cattle and the cows get free health care. And then they go to the butcher and then they get their throat slit and then they die and then they get eaten. Right. So just because you get free health care doesn't mean your government loves you.
But they didn't have to work, though.
That's right. Yeah. And they didn't have to take responsibility for any of their decisions. So,
yeah. Yeah. So, what do you think some of the steps toward the ultimate goal are supposed to be, and what do you see as part of the ultimate goal?
Yeah, well, I think clearly the ultimate goal is a totalitarian world system that eradicates family, eradicates private property, eradicates individual liberty, eradicates free speech, and if they could, eradicates God and even any conception of God, right? They are waging war against the Christian church. They're even raising war against Islam, right? They don't like that people have this allegiance to something other than them, right? Or to government or to whatever institutions they control. And so they despise God-fearing people with a fanatical passion that I think most people can't even begin to understand because it's just so alien to us. And so I think that's the goal, a totalitarian global system. And they've got several key, you know, steps on the road to this objective. One of the ones that's really in the news a lot right now is the Paris Agreement. You know, people think it's to solve man-made global warming. Well, I've got news for you. Man-made global warming is not a thing, right? It's not to solve man-made global warming. It's to enslave you. And, you know, of course, there's, you know, things going on with, you know, the engineering of the weather that they've been working on for a long time. But the idea that CO2 is going to cause catastrophic global warming is absurd. And yet that is one of the crucial narratives, because what they're telling us is, hey, we have this global problem. That is the gas you exhale. It's a toxic pollution.
Yes.
And obviously, if it's a global problem, we need a global solution to it. So, hey,
God
here's
really
the solution.
Blew it on that one. Not
right. No kidding. and their global solution is always the same. Less money and less freedom for you, and more money and more power for us. And so just like all these other alleged global problems, the alleged solution to this global problem of man-made global warming is to give the UN more power to give them the authority to tax our carbon emissions, right? Yeah. And so that's a big step on the road to this project, right? Because right now, one of the things that they're really lacking for this is a global mechanism that can finance all of this without any interruptions from people like President Trump, who comes along and says, like, well, you know what? We don't want to give you any more money. So right. Go pound sand. Well, they don't like that, right? They want to be able to raise their own money. So they want, first of all, a source of revenue that they can raise at will, which in this case would be, you know, taxation on carbon emissions. Eventually they want their own money printing machine, right? So in the U.S. we have the Federal Reserve and all this. Well, they're moving now to get the IMF to become kind of the global Federal Reserve, right? They've already got the proto-global currency, the special drawing rights, which already exists, right? It's based on a basket of currencies. They can create it at will. But right now, it's not really quite a global currency yet, right? Right now, the dollar still kind of underpins the global financial system. Well, the day is coming, potentially in the not-too-distant future, where that system is going to switch and you're going to have SDRs serving as kind of global liquidity, global currency, and the U.S. dollar becoming just one, you know, component of that global currency system. And we're headed toward that very quickly. But I think these are two of the big milestones on the road to this world order, is global taxation and a truly global monetary system. And I think both of those are high on the agenda right now. Again, Trump kind of threw a monkey wrench in it because he said, hey, we're going to withdraw from the Paris Agreement. There goes our plan for global taxes and destroying the U.S. economy. And the IMF is not going to be able to take its rightful place as a global central bank as long as you have an opponent of globalism running the most powerful national government on the face of the earth right now.
That's why they're working on that as a high priority right now.
Precisely. So, that's why you got to impeach him. You got to discredit him. You got to discredit his supporters. And, they may well collapse the economy and say it was all Trump's fault. See, you should never vote for a conservative again.
Exactly. And we'll make sure that you don't in case you forget.
Right. Exactly.
What about the relationship of the CFR and all the things you just went over to the existing system of central banks that are positioned in every major country, controlling basically the economy of that country and siphoning off the wealth of the people into the hands of the bank owners?
Yeah, we need to be clear that all over the world, the central banking systems of the nations work very similarly, right? They create currency out of thin air, then they charge the government and the taxpayers interest to use money that they created out of nothing.
And Russia and China both have.
That's right. They each have the same, right? And so does pretty much every country in the world. It's the ultimate scam, right? You print people's money and then you charge them to use it, and it's not even, you can't even pay it back, right? Because if they create only $100. Just hypothetically, there's only $100 in the economy, and the Federal Reserve is the only source of new dollars except for the money that the commercial banks create, but then we're still in the same problem. They create the principal, but they don't create the interest that's required to pay it back. And so what happens is, if you pay them back all the principal, you're still going to owe them the interest. So then you need to go back and you need to borrow more money so that you can pay back the interest. And it's just a vicious cycle. So it's an enormous scam. I think it's so huge that a lot of people struggle to comprehend how it could even imagine
that would be going on. I mean,
Hitler said, tell them a big lie. Cause, people can recognize small lies because normal people tell small lies all the time. No, honey, you don't look bad in that dress, right? But tell them a huge lie, and people are like, no, I would never do something like that, right? So you would never expect that your government would deceive you in such an enormous manner. And so we have this, the CFR is kind of the American branch of this international operation, but all over the world, you have these central banks, and they even cooperate with each other. They've got the Bank for International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland, where they come together and they coordinate their policies. Now they've got negative interest rates in a lot of places. So this is the coordinated global looting of humanity for the benefit of a tiny, tiny, tiny elite. And I like to refer to this elite as like a diabolical conspiracy. It's not my term of conspiracy. David Rockefeller was bragging that he was a conspirator. So it's these people who call themselves conspirators. It doesn't technically meet the definition of conspiracy, because by definition, a conspiracy must be secret. And, if you're bragging about it in your autobiography, it's kind of secret because, most people can't read properly anymore. But
it's secret in plain sight, kind of.
Right. If somebody really wanted wanted to, they could find out. So it's not quite as secret as it could be. And so it's not quite a conspiracy, but it behaves very much like a conspiracy. The CFR is an instrumental part of this. And ultimately, the goal is this world government, controlling all the money, controlling all the armed forces of the planet, and bringing us all together under this UN global system. And if it's not the UN, it'll be an organization they create to replace the UN. I mean, the UN's pretty discredited at this point, especially among Americans. So it's not inconceivable that they may go back to the drawing board and come back with another international organization if they ditch the UN. But that's the general direction that we're moving in.
And on the way to that, why do you think that they arranged to give such massive military forces to Russia and China? You know, China just had this giant parade with all their missiles going down the street and everything. And they had quite a few of them, a lot of big ones. And supposedly, before they were given that stuff from the West, they didn't have anything of the sort.
And it's the same thing with Russia. It's exactly the same thing with Russia. Without Western technology that we both gave them voluntarily and which they stole with, you know, us looking the other way deliberately, especially CFR people, they would still be backwards, third world, incredibly poor countries. I mean, communism is not a legitimate economic system. It's not even a legitimate ideology. It's just kind of a pretext to legitimize criminality and theft and extortion and mass murder. I think the reason why they gave these powers so much, we built up Stalin's military during World War II under the guise of being allied with Uncle Joe. And then we built up Communist China's military more quietly, more subtly. Bill Clinton, again, handed them all our most sensitive nuclear technology, military technology. And I think the reason why they did this is, well, there's probably several reasons. One of them being so that the United States cannot on its own challenge the rest of the world, right? If they end up having to invade us and conquer us and destroy us, they need to make sure that that's plausible, right? As it stood, at the end of World War II, the American economy represented more than 50% of GDP, right? Basically, the entire world could join forces against America, and it would have just been a piece of cake to knock them out of the water. It would have been effortless. And so, they had that problem to deal with. Yeah, we need to use America and American military to build the new world order, but hey, what if they wake up one day and don't agree with us anymore? Well, we need to have the means to credibly challenge them.
So what about the idea that they're set up to actually do a massive strike against the U.S. so that the only way out is some kind of a world government to keep peace?
I think that's entirely plausible. And in fact, the globalists themselves have written on some of this stuff. Lincoln Bloomfield, he was a globalist at the CFR, actually. He worked for the State Department, the Institute for Defense Analyses, and he was hired to write this report. It ended up being titled A World Effectively Governed or Controlled by the United Nations. And this is a public document. You can still read it today. And his challenge was, how do you get from where we are today, a world with independent, sovereign nation states, to a world effectively controlled and governed by the UN? And he figured out that the most effective way to do it, the fastest way to do it, was to use war and the threat of war. And so I think it's entirely possible that Russia, China, and a coalition of other governments could eventually team up against the United States, massive attack, potentially even a nuclear strike on major American cities, followed by an occupation. I think that's entirely feasible. I don't know for sure that they would do that, but I know they've developed plans to do that. In fact, I happen to know a guy who's written a whole bunch of books, and he has documents showing that there was an actual plan by the Soviet Union and others to come into the United States. And there was domestic forces preparing to help them, right? Bill Ayers, the founder of the Weather Underground, communist terrorist organization that was receiving funding and support and guidance from communist Cuba, from the regime in Havana. By the way, Obama started his political career in the home of Bill Ayers, to give you a sense of how much power they've gained. They were making plans. We know from Larry Grathwell, he was the FBI agent who infiltrated the leadership of this Weather Underground. And people can watch this video on YouTube. He explains that at one of the leadership meetings, they were working out the mechanics of what do we do once we take over, right? They were going to invite the Soviet government in to take part of America, the Chinese government, the North Korean government, the Cuban government. They were each going to have a piece of the United States to occupy while the new communist totalitarian government of America was being established. And this guy, Larry Grathwell, said, "Oh, that's all great. Yeah, but what are we going to do with all those Americans who are just like diehard capitalists? And they're just not going to adapt to the new way of thinking." Say, "Oh, well, we got to put them in camps and we're going to re-educate them." And he's like, "Well, what about the ones that we can't re-educate, right? There's going to be some that are just so diehard capitalist Christian, we're never going to be able to undo that. So, we just have to liquidate those." And they were planning the extermination of 25 million Americans in these camps. Let that sink in. 25 million Americans. And back then, that was more than 10% of the population. We're talking about, actual preparations for exterminating a huge percentage of the American population. And anybody who thinks, oh, well, the Cold War's over, we won, that's not a threat anymore, again, has not been paying attention. If you want to know more about that, again, I've got this great book behind me. I can't recommend it highly enough. Anatoly Golitsyn, New Lies for the Old. And then he's got another one, The Perestroika Deception, where he explains very, very clearly how they deliberately created these plans within Moscow back in the 1960s to have a fake collapse of communism in Eastern Europe and in Russia, and how eventually they were planning this global second October revolution, where they were going to take the entire world and put it under one global totalitarian government. And, a lot of globalists in the West are working toward that same objective. People think of communists as being opposed to the super capitalists of the West, but it's a complete misconception. The Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, the Morgans, the Schiffs, all these mega banking families have been intimately involved with communism from the beginning.
So do you think that the motivation of the people running that and pushing for it, Bill Ayers in the U.S. and all these people playing their part working toward totalitarian world government are doing it for various versions of the vision that they would be in a position of power themselves?
Yes, I think absolutely. These people have become pretty adept at understanding what drives people, what motivates people. For some people, it's power. For some people, it's prestige. For some people, it's women. For some people, it's money, right? The Bible says the love of money is the root of all evil, or all kinds of evil, depending on what translation you use. So they figure out, okay, well, hey, Bill Ayers, he's a pervert. He likes, such and such. Well, what do we need to motivate him? Right? And each of these guys may have slightly different motivations. But I think, generally speaking, they're motivated by worldly desires, having more money, having more power. And what they don't realize, they're so naive, they're so stupid, it makes me want to cry. Every time these maniacs take over, they always end up eating each other, right? Leon Trotsky ended up with an ice pick in his head in Mexico City, right? And these morons like Bill Ayers think that everything's going to work out just fine and they're going to rule the world. You morons, you're going to end up with an ice pick in the side of your head, right? You're going to make a big mess before that, but you're going to end up dead too. Think about how many of his closest people Stalin had liquidated and tortured. Right. That's going to be you, all you little fools who are working toward this agenda. You think you're going to end up on top? Never, 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 never. Right. You're going to get eaten just like the rest of them.
So it comes down to those kinds of intelligence. Right.
Yep.
They're really clever in implementing the plans.
They're
not brilliant in thinking ahead to what's going to happen.
That's exactly right. And they all think that it's going to work out fine and I'm going to end up on top and I'm going to be rich and I'm going to have all this power, not realizing that the cutthroats that you're working with are thinking the same thing, and they would stab their own mother in the back to get ahead. You think they won't stab you in the back? Get out of here, right?
So that could be applied all the way up to the top, where you've got people even above the money system entirely running it from a satanic point of view just for the purpose of causing pain, and they don't realize that it would ever come back to them.
Precisely. And I think when you boil it all down, that is really what we're dealing with. If you read the Bible, there's countless references to this being a spiritual war, right? And we're really talking about demonic forces involved in a lot of this. And so, when Robert Welch talked about a diabolical conspiracy, I don't think you can truly comprehend what's going on unless you realize that part of it's not even in the physical, right? Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of lunatics and psychopaths who think they're going to enslave the world, but it goes even deeper than that, right? When you start looking at some of the rituals these people engage in, look at the stuff the Bohemian Grove people do, right? There's a lot of overlap between the CFR and the Bohemian Grove. These weirdos go out into the redwood forest of Northern California, that's their little once a year party, all men, and they run around naked and they pee on trees and they wear hoods and they chant about the forest spirits and they stand in front of a 40-foot stone owl and they sacrifice what they claim is a child effigy, right? Who does that, right? Who does that?
They're not just worshiping financial profit.
Right. It's much more sinister than that, right?
Yeah. And so, where does basically the UN fit into this whole picture at the moment?
Well, I think the best way to understand the UN It's just a tool of these people. It's just a tool of this operation. And so, you know, a lot of people, I think, see the UN as like the source of the problem. The UN is not the source of the problem. It's a symptom of the problem. It's a tool of these evil forces to advance their objective. And if it ceased being useful as a tool, they would discard it and bring a new tool in, right? Just like the League of Nations. The League of Nations wasn't the source of the problem. The League of Nations was a tool of these evil men, these evil forces that are trying to enslave humanity. And when it ceases to be useful, they just whip out a new tool.
Right. And it always has such a beautiful facade, you know, like an organization dedicated to world peace and ending disease. And I think now Agenda 2030, they're planning to end stress of all kinds. And nobody will be hungry. Ultimately, nobody will have to work. Nobody will have to actually do anything. And it's going to be nirvana or some kind of utopia.
That's what they're telling us. Yeah, that's what they're telling us, right? If you read Agenda 2030, we're going to eliminate hunger and we're going to eliminate poverty. Yeah. And if you disagree, you must want hungry people and you must love poverty.
That's right.
It's absolutely absurd. But yeah, that's how they convince naive and gullible people, Richard.
Right. Nobody wants to be against good.
Right. And you hear eliminate poverty. Oh, I'm for eliminating poverty. Sign me up.
Exactly. So, well, interesting playing field that we're working on now. And I think we'll just keep going in future installments. And the obvious question is, once you understand this kind of pyramid-shaped power structure with a very small cartel of rulers on the top, probably non-physical rulers above them programming them with what to do, then you start looking at solutions.
That's right.
I don't know any reason to know about all this stuff other than that it gives you the background to think about what would be the best countermeasure or response.
That's right. And, you know, knowledge is power. And as the Bible says, the truth shall set you free. So, you know, if you're ignorant about these things, nothing makes sense, right? Why are the things happening in the world that are happening? It makes absolutely no sense. It's random. It's chaotic. You know, I got to hide, build me a bunker, you know, all this stuff. But when you understand what you're dealing with, when you understand the problem, it's much easier to come to sensible conclusions. It's easier to understand what's going on. It's easier to make proper plans for yourself, for your family, for your friends, for your community. And even just for its own sake, right? It's good to have knowledge. It's good to know who you are. It's good to know who your enemies are. It's good to know what they want to do with you and what tools they're using to advance that agenda. Even for its own sake, it's good to have this kind of knowledge. But there's so many reasons why people have, in my opinion, a duty, an obligation to become informed on these things. And, you know, even if you don't have children and grandchildren, you have some responsibility for passing this world on to coming generations. And, even if you're selfish, I hope you'll take the time to learn about these things, because it's very, very important. Everything is on the line. And, as decent human beings, we need to be involved in this.
Right. And no reason to be unselfish, because this is actually the best thing you could do for yourself.
That's right.
So that's exactly right. Maybe next time when you come back, we'll talk about your ideas about education. And from all your background working for Freedom Project and other places, if you were able to design the perfect educational system in response to the picture we've painted, what that would look like, I think that would be fun.
I would love to discuss that. So, and I think we've talked a little bit about this. Education is kind of what I've spent most of my year on this year, the Rescuing Our Children special report. I'll be out in Nevada this weekend talking about it. After that, I'll be in Idaho. After that, I'll be in Utah and, you know, all over the place. So if people have children or people are interested in the education stuff, I do encourage them to come on out. And I look forward to talking to you about it sometime very soon, Rich.
Yeah. How can they stay up to date with where you're going to be and all those kind of announcement type things?
So most of my articles go at thenewamerican.com. If people want to come out and see me at one of my talks on the Rescuing Our Children that I'm still on, you can find the whole list at libertysentinel.org/tour. That's the most up-to-date locations, dates, places, contact people. And I'd love to see people out there. And if people want to get a copy of this special report, go to thenewamerican.com/rescuingourchildren. And you'll learn about what's going on in the public school system, how it got this way, where it's going, the role that it plays in all of what we just talked about, Richard, the effort to build this world government. I mean, the primary tool of these people in advancing this agenda is the government school system, flat out. Stop, no discussion. There is nothing in their arsenal as powerful as the ability to shape the views and beliefs and attitudes and values of your children through the public school system.
So that, they say, is a universal right. We're going to make sure that your children are not left out, that they all get this wonderful education, and don't worry, we've already decided what it should be.
Exactly right.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to coming back and taking up at that point with the educational ideas that you would propose.
Awesome. Looking forward to it, Richard. Thank you.
All right. Hold on. We'll say goodbye in the break here. Okay, you guys, there goes Alex Newman. And it's always an intense, concentrated educational experience for me when we get to have Alex on. And when he has time, he's really busy, obviously, doing all these tours all over the country. And remember that he did say, if you want to get up to date on where he's going to be speaking, you mentioned Nevada and some other places, you can look at let's see, what did I write down? LibertySentinel.org/tour. LibertySentinel.org/tour. And his main site, remember, is from the magazine, is thenewamerican.com. And the school site is fpeusa.org, where he works helping with education of kids online as a better alternative to the regular government schools. Really interesting guy, so it's worth keeping up with his work. Definitely paints kind of a imposing picture of the hierarchy of evil that's running things right now. But I don't think he is devoid of hope at all. He really puts a lot of trust in education on a better level than it's operating now. And I totally agree with him now. I'd say education about your own capability, and secondly, of everything that's going on, is really critical. And hopefully that will be developed more and more. And we're working with that exact principle on Lost Arts Radio. And hope that you'll stay involved in it and stay in touch with us, because never can tell in the atmosphere of total censorship how long we'll be visible on the major platforms. So two things about that. You want to go to Lost Arts, or no, Brighteon, Brighteon.com/channel/Lost Arts Radio. Great alternative platform started by Mike. And also to get on our mailing list in case there's no other way to reach you, you can text to, I even wrote down the number that Doug set up that you can send a text to with your name and email address to be on the mailing list just in case. It's 928-235-4676. And just text your name and email address, and you'll be on the list to use. Also, anybody that wants to get into the deeper, uncensored, interactive, working with this kind of thing, things that we can't say on the public platforms and where you can actually discuss them and work on your own personal situations, go to planetaryhealingclub.com, planetaryhealingclub.com, and that's an access point to the private meetings that we hold once a week. And Doug and I are there live every week. It'd be nice to see you there if you're up to it. That's not really a spectator involvement. We invite people who really want to start working on yourself and upgrading, transforming your own life as much as possible as kind of a first step to what you can do to help turn around the world situation, starting with yourself. Some amazing possibilities that we have, each one of us in our own potential, that are not talked about and you're not supposed to know about, and we can freely discuss them there. We also have a new page at subscribestar.com/Lost Arts Radio. If you have resources and you want to help us stay on the air and expand our projects and ultimately do our school, you can go to subscribestar.com/Lost Arts Radio, or just to the donate button on any of our sites. And it's not just the radio sites, but the nonprofit site. It'd be nice if you get a chance to look at that. And it has a little bit about what the school could look like, one possible scenario. And you go to lostartsresearchinstitute.org and look at the tab that says Eldamar, E-L-D-A-M-A-R, the name of the school. And if you want to send me feedback, let me know what you think of it, or questions or anything like that, you can send me email at richard@lostartsradio.com. Same thing, I occasionally do private sessions with people in difficult life and health situations, or who just want to transform their lives and need a kickstart for that. I can give you a little more detail on that by email, richard@lostartsradio.com, and stay in touch with all of our Sunday upcoming shows. They get announced on our site, lostartsradio.com, and also Blog Talk Radio, where it's audio only, but people who are driving at the time of the show and want to listen can listen in on the live show from the telephone. Let's see, what else did I tell you? Everything on the list here. I think that's most of it, and we'd like to have your feedback anytime you want. If you're up to participating in the club, then check out planetaryhealingclub.com, and we'll meet you on Saturday when we have our next live show, our live meeting. So, and oh, speaking of live shows that are actually shows, on Saturday afternoon, 4:30 Pacific, 7:30 Eastern, we have Lost Arts Radio Live. If you haven't checked into that yet, you might want to take a look. The archives are free on all the major platforms, and let us know what you think about that too, and we'll see you on the next Sunday show. Have a good week.
Introducing Lost Arts Radio on Subscribestar.com. Just go to Subscribestar.com/Lost Arts Radio to find our rewards program, offering 10 different giving levels starting at just $5 a month. We offer incredible value for any rewards level, from extra monthly interview videos not available publicly to subscription-based Planetary Healing Club videos once, twice, or three times a month, to private counseling sessions with Lost Arts Radio host Richard Sachs, to tech help with me, Doug Diamond. We even have one option where you can be the star on Lost Arts Radio as our guest on a specially produced show just for you. We conduct an interview with you and broadcast it to our growing network and listenership. Our Subscribestar levels are one of a kind and offer great rewards for any budget. Please help support Lost Arts Radio. We can't do it without you. With increasing censorship on many of our channels, we really need your support today to keep doing what we're doing. As Richard says, we're not even at survival level yet. Lost Arts Radio has three weekly shows. Lost Arts Radio Live each Saturday night at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific, which is a live stream currently on multiple platforms in case we get banned from some of the larger ones. Right now, we're on two YouTube channels, Facebook Live, Periscope, which is Twitter, Twitch, and DLive. You can access these broadcasts by going to www.lostartsradio.com/live for all the links to those channels. The Planetary Healing Club meets right after Lost Arts Radio Live at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on Saturday nights. And our Sunday show with guests airs at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on Sunday nights on our Blog Talk Radio channel, our YouTube channels, Facebook pages, and on Brighteon. Be sure to sign up for our free email list just in case we do get banned on big tech's platforms. It's just a matter of time, really. They don't like the stuff we talk about, and they do not want the truth out there. In fact, they have already attacked us numerous times. Join our free email list so we can let you know where we are and how to access our shows. The sign-up button is right on the top right on most pages of our website. The best starting point for all things Lost Arts Radio is our main site, lostartsradio.com, where you can find the hottest new selection videos that we curate just for you. Those are on the homepage and added to daily, as well as articles and breaking news about information you really need to know. Our show archives, the 10 most recent shows, are right on our homepage, as well as our Blog Talk Radio page at blogtalkradio.com/lostartsradio, or just click the All Things Radio Show tab right on our website. We're in the podcast directory on iTunes, and all of our shows except the banned ones are on our YouTube channels at Lost Arts Radio and at Diamond Disc. Our Brighteon page is really taking off, and we often have editors' picks videos right on their homepage. Visit Brighteon.com/channel/Lost Arts Radio. On our site, you can also access our free listener forum as well as sign up for the Planetary Healing Club, which is just $25 a month, where you get private access to a one-on-one interaction with host Richard Sachs and myself and the other club members who participate live. More info can be found at planetaryhealingclub.com. We're providing solutions in there to make the world a better place. Come join us. Stay tuned, because up next, you'll get to hear a really great song by an independent artist that we're doing our best to support. Go to lostartsradio.com/music for the full list of all the great songs and bands that we spin on our audio-only podcast shows. If you're in a band and want to submit a song for consideration for airplay on Lost Arts Radio, visit my website at diamonddiscaudio.com for more information about the music placement, mastering, and mixing work that I do. Thanks again for listening to and supporting Lost Arts Radio. We love having you as part of our family to learn, experience, and grow with.
Cyberspace, it's all over the place, got control of the human race. Big brother, he's watching you with the click of the mouse. He's in your house, he's in your phone, right there with you, wherever you go. Can't run, break his law, and Big Brother will come, yeah.